Hello and welcome to my latest podcast episode, which today is Janine Green ASB Chats Collaborative Working. Now, I've worked in antisocial behaviour and community safety for probably longer than I've dared to think about, but getting on for 15, 16 years now, and I have kind of the pleasure of getting out and speaking to practitioners on a regular basis and learning about what works really well in terms of tackling ASB, but also what the challenges are, what the obstacles are, what the barriers are. And at every point in my last 15, 16 years of working in this sector, when I've asked practitioners what the challenge is, one of the biggest ones that comes up time and time again is working in collaboration with people. So partnership working, building those relationships, and nothing has changed. And we're still at this point where people will say, I can't get people to work with me. I can't get information to be shared with me. It's really standing in the way of me doing my job, resolving the ASB and supporting victims. So I always like to try and make my podcast episodes as useful as possible. And so partnership working is something that I've reflected on before. Had Darren Burton along from Forbes Solicitors talking about partnership working. But very recently, I had the pleasure of being asked to speak at a Women in Social Housing event, which was actually on public speaking. And one of my fellow speakers was my guest, who I've got on my podcast episode today, Kim, who spoke to me about who spoke on the webinar about partnership working, but from a much more broader perspective. So Kim is not an ASB specialist. I'm sure she doesn't mind me saying that it's quite an unfamiliar area to her. But what she does bring is a huge amount of experience and skill and knowledge about how we can build relationships and how we can best work with people. So this is a slightly different podcast episode because we're looking at a little bit more around the soft skills, the more generic skills that are required to build those relationships. And what I'm hoping is that you can take some of the kind of learning and guidance and tips that Kim has to bring to this episode to help you in terms of overcoming some of those challenges that you might face on a day-to-day basis. So that's the challenge for me and Kim today. So I think the first thing it would be right for me to do is to introduce Kim. So Kim is Managing Director of PML Group. And I'm going to say absolutely no more than that. And I'm going to hand it over to Kim. And firstly, Kim, just a huge thank you, really, for taking the time out to be with me today. And for so generously offering your time to come and speak to my listeners. I wonder if you could start by just telling me a little bit more about you and what you do.
Hi, Janine. Well, it's a pleasure to come and have a chat with you today. In terms of me and what I do, and what my business does, we are, in its simplest terms, a consultancy, but we're a consultancy that focuses on two very specific things. One of those is performance improvement, and the other is collaboration. And the two are quite often very closely linked. We work with organisations such as housing associations, local authorities, and even private sector service providers to put in place the sort of skills, behaviours, the knowledge to enable people to work together more effectively in collaboration and to use that as the basis for ongoing improvement. So that's what we do in a nutshell.
Lovely. I think the first question, I'm always really mindful that sometimes, particularly in public sector, I think, we slip into this trap of having kind of titles and labels for things, but not really checking that we're both understanding what that label means. So I guess my first question is to help us bring a kind of base level for us to work from today in this conversation. So if I was to ask you to provide me with a short definition of what you think partnership working is, what would you say?
I mean, I think, first of all, I totally agree with you, Janine. We often find that terms are misunderstood, overused, and that can have a negative effect on the ability to implement these things. From my perspective, collaboration and the definition of it is quite simple. It's where two or more people or organisations work together towards shared goals for a greater mutual benefit than if they were working together, working on their own. So we're trying to make 2 and 2 equal 5, really, in its simplest terms. But you are right, it is often misunderstood or seen to be something that we should be doing without fully understanding what it takes to do this properly.
And I think that's a really good point, because if we kind of apply that to what I see very often in kind of ASB casework, is that we have different agencies working together that don't really understand each other's objectives. So, I mean, a really common example in kind of the housing world is if you've got an ASB officer who is kind of ringing up social services to say, you know, I'm working with this person, I think you are too, will you come along to a meeting? I think, unfortunately, what happens sometimes is social services might very quickly think that the ASB officer's objective is to evict the client. And of course, from a social services point of view, that's the complete opposite of what they're trying to achieve in terms of bringing some consistency and kind of calming the chaos, perhaps, in the household. And I think you therefore get this tension because people aren't sure of what each other's objectives are. And I think you've probably, that's pretty much what you're saying there, which is maybe one of the first points that we need to kind of reflect and learn on, is that we need to make sure that we understand each other's objectives.
I'd agree with that. And I think even before that, it's probably another step back to sort of think about why should we collaborate in the first place, and what will the benefits of doing that be? Because I think sometimes there is either a reluctance or an over excitement, shall we say, in the thought of collaborating, but without understanding the foundation reasons for doing it. And then when you add on top of that, you know, expectations and goals, particularly goals, and if they're not shared, then what you tend to find is very quickly you're working at cross purposes because you're not aligned. You know, you're not focusing on the same end goal, and therefore you're probably creating the tension before you've even been able to really progress anything to any great extent.
No, absolutely. And I think we see that playing out in practice quite a lot. I want to pick up on something that you mentioned in the first answer that you gave me, which you talked about kind of the skills that people need to be able to effectively work in partnership. I just wondered whether you might just develop that a little bit, because that for me was quite interesting. What are the things that you would say people need to be able to work well in partnership with each other?
Yeah, no problem at all. So I think, again, one of the things we need to realise, and if truth be told, and we reflect on our own relationships, you know, day to day, is that actually, in order for things to be successful, in order for relationships to be successful, you sometimes have to adjust behaviours. And, you know, it's no different with our partners in our own life to what it is at work. We often adjust what we're doing, and collaboration is no different. But you find yourself in a position where if you don't adopt the right behaviours, you tend to create an automatic tension. And so what we tend to spend quite a bit of time doing is getting some foundation behaviours in place when organisations or teams start to work together. And what we do is get them to start off by being very open with each other. And that in itself is a significant step. And that's by, you know, breaking a bit of ice and just, you know, putting the work bits to one side, but getting people to actually know each other and talk to each other as we would in, you know, if we went for a, well, if we could, of course, go for a drink, but if we went for a drink with each other, and just break the barriers down a little bit, because if we're going to work in partnership, we need to be able to just have a conversation without any barrier. So we start to break that relationship down a little bit and get people to feel comfortable. And we start to look at things that, strangely enough, undermine some of the ability to build that relationship. And perceptions, for example, is a massive area where, you know, we all find in our day-to-day life and work that we'll have an underlying perception of something or somebody. You know, it'll be that person always does that every time they've done that. And it's something that sits in our mind and we find hard to get rid of. And so if we have those sorts of perceptions of a business or an organisation or a team, that affects how you'll behave. And then we have to find a way to change that, because that person just thinks of that perception as their reality. The other thing is expectations. And, you know, one of the things we often find is that we all have some form of expectation But actually, that's not the basis by which the other person ultimately thinks they're being judged. So when there's this mismatch, when all of a sudden you're trying to have a conversation, this other person will say to you, or team will say to you, we didn't realise you were looking at that. We didn't realise that you were expecting that. So if we can't unravel some of those things at the earliest stage, they just continue to create a barrier or an issue in the relationship. So if we can start to break those down and you can share openly with each other what your expectations are, you can start to build a much more fruitful and productive relationship.
I think there's a number of really good points that you've made there, Kim. And I think I remember when we had our initial conversation about setting this call up, that one of the things that I kind of jokingly referred to was this kind of urban legend type situation that we find ourselves in, where I very often might speak to practitioners and say, right, tell me about the multi-agency forums that you operate. You know, do you have representation from health, for example? And the answer is, well, no, because they never come. And you kind of go, well, when was the last time you invited them? And it was like 1982 or something. But it's just this idea, you've hit the nail on the head. It's just this concept that this one bad experience that we had 20 years ago has kind of just continued with us, and we just don't try to make those efforts again. I think that's such an important point. I love what you were saying as well about kind of trying to, almost before you go in to try and get people around the table, that kind of just building relationships. So, you know, almost like you say, have a coffee with somebody, maybe invite them to a team meeting, you know, have a bit more of a relaxed conversation and find out a little bit more about what they do and what they're trying to achieve. I really, really like that idea. And the point about expectations as well. I think sometimes we become very guilty of just assuming that the other person knows what we're asking of them. So as you say, maybe we need to sometimes be a little bit more clear when we are kind of setting actions and tasks and stuff. Maybe we need to be a little bit more clear about what it is that we're actually expecting back.
I think so. It's interesting is when you think about your example of inviting them to a meeting, and the last time was 1982. It's that happens all the time in different guises and in different ways in the sessions that we run. And it's amazing though how quickly, if you get people together and just have a general chat, just start to break down the barriers, how quickly those perceptions can be changed. And we sort of liken it a little bit to your own relationship in life. You know, you wouldn't necessarily leap straight into an engagement without courting. And it's similar in this scenario, if you like. You know, if you think of a meeting or a discussion as being the start of the courting process or a furtherance of the courting process, you're learning to get to know each other a little bit. And the issue with perceptions is it's not that person that can change them. It's you. You have to demonstrate that actually what they think is wrong, and dispel the myths a little bit. And, you know, the coffee and the relaxed conversation and as we do it, a little bit of, you know, drawing on a flip chart and all sorts of silly games, but they work. They really work.
No, I love that. There's some great ideas there that I hope people listening can kind of maybe explore a bit more and take away and perhaps build on. I know we've kind of touched on some of this already, so absolutely feel free to say it. I've answered that already. But what I wanted to just expand on a little bit more, I suppose, is what you think is key to effective partnership working. So what needs to happen? What absolutely needs to be in place for effective partnership working to be able to take place?
I think, you know, and key for me at the start of this process is really to understand why. So often people go into a scenario without clarity as to what the why is. What is it that organisation or team can do that you can't? What can you do to assist and support them? Because that's key. It's a two-way thing, collaboration. So it's never just a one-way street. So as well as what you're looking for, what value can you add to the relationship yourself? I think that's a key starting point for me. I think then it's about taking the time to to think about ultimately what is a measure of success. And so often, again, there's, if this is a successful partnership, how would we know? And that's not always thought through and understood. And quite often relationships will fall apart because of that, because there was no sort of structure around it. And I think that whoever's leading the organisation, the team, or whatever the situation may be, I think it's important that there is that clarity that's pushed through from senior levels, and the commitment behind that, because it always provides a real robust recommendation if that's being pushed as a key thread or a key approach, and that helps you to then get those mutual objectives in place. If you haven't got that key support, it's a real uphill struggle sometimes to get teams to work together. So, you know, I think it's the why are you doing it? It's what can you bring to it? And I think it's really thinking about those mutual objectives. So you've got a really solid foundation, and that should help in any circumstance or situation to build that sort of robust, you know, concrete foundation for building on, really.
Do you know what? I love that kind of what is the why are we, what we're trying to achieve? Because I think sometimes we have multi-agency work meetings that might look at people who are perpetrating ASB, and we probably do things the wrong way around rather than looking at what we're trying to achieve. We just jump straight into the what are the actions that we're going to take, whereas perhaps if as a group we agreed what we wanted the outcome to be and then almost worked backwards in terms of how we then get to that outcome, that actually might present itself with a better and a more beneficial outcome for everybody. But also I think what you're saying is, at least that way then, if we looked at and kind of almost crystallize what the outcome is that everybody was looking for, then at least everybody would be clear and on the same page, and there wouldn't be this kind of unexpected nasty surprises with some agencies going, well, I didn't think this was going to be the outcome and I'm not working with you again because that's not the outcome we would have been looking for. So I think that I really like that point. But the other thing that from what you just said that I really just want to reflect back on was this kind of concept of it being a two-way relationship. And I have to say, from having worked in ASB for the length of time that I have and having worked with officers and offering advice now, one of the things that I do see going wrong is that it very much feels like one-way relationships sometimes. So to give an example, you know, it might be an ASB officer is requesting information from the police, which it takes time and effort to pull that information together and then share it with the ASB officer. But then the police officer maybe never gets feedback on what's happened with that information. So what I try to say to officers was, well, put yourself in the shoes of that police officer who has incredibly limited time, you know, particularly at the moment. We know that because of the kind of demands of COVID. Hugely challenging, you know, limited time, takes the time out to do that for you, but then doesn't know what's happened. So the next time that you ask for that kind of information, there's probably going to be a reluctance to do it. And I think also some of the time what happens is that it's not that the ASB officer isn't doing anything with that information, it's just that they're not feeding that back. And I think as human beings, we assume that if we don't hear anything, then nothing is happening. So, you know, it's like if we make a complaint to our internet provider because our internet's down, if we didn't hear anything for 4 weeks, we would be raging because we'd been assuming they hadn't done anything, even if they were busy doing everything possible behind the scenes. So I think there's something about making sure that we are appreciating what others are doing for us, but also feeding back what we're doing with what they've done for us, if that makes sense.
No, it absolutely does. And I think, you know, understanding each other's position, and as you say, it's a bit about stepping into another person's shoes, and we try and reinforce that regularly, because it's so easy, because again of expectations, it's so easy to find yourself, you know, losing patience or not appreciating other people's challenges or not thinking about other people's time commitments and just focusing on your own sort of silo. And then that's where things really start to become very tense. And ultimately, as you say, if you're clear about, you know, what both organisations or agencies or teams are trying to achieve and your part in it, then actually you can help the other party understand the challenges that you have in at the same time. And, mm-hmm. and it starts to really open up, say, open up that dialogue, and you can share without feeling like it's some sort of admission of, I don't know, not failure, but admission of underperformance or otherwise. You know, you can share the challenges and work together to best accommodate those rather than point out where someone hasn't met a deadline or otherwise. And I think this is where, you know, we often see that that ability to open up is not easy to some degree. It does make you, I guess, quite vulnerable or feel quite vulnerable. And we always say it takes courage, you know, it takes courage to collaborate. It's not easy. But if you can make it work, and we've, you know, there are tons of examples where this is a successful way of working, it just yields so many benefits. But you do have to be prepared to say, actually, it's going to take me 3 weeks and it's going to take me 3 weeks. And you have to just bear with me. I may not get back to you straight away, but don't, you know, and just have those sorts of honest conversations and you know, take a bit of time really to consider how your roles could perhaps maybe even support and assist.
And I guess, I think that's a really good point, because I guess also being open, and I don't know, vulnerable is probably a bit strong word, but saying things like, you know, I'm really, really busy at the moment, I will come back to you, but it might take me, you know, a couple of weeks. Mm. I mean, that in itself can help build a relationship, kind of a genuine relationship, because that's probably the kind of thing where the other person's going to turn around and go, oh, me too, isn't it really hard at the moment? And suddenly you've got this much more authentic conversation and authentic relationship being built. It's interesting. One of the things that I, a good friend of mine, Jim, he wrote a LinkedIn post the other day, which talks about leaving egos at the door when it comes to partnership working. And I think sometimes where I've seen partnerships kind of break down a little bit is when one agency is kind of taking credit for the work of the partnership. And I don't know whether you've seen any kind of examples of that, and what you would suggest if that's happened.
Yeah, we do see that sometimes, and I think some of this is back to behaviours and the appreciation that, you know, if one person wins, we should all be winning. It's, you know, it's about that, and if we don't, then the partnership hasn't won. And We do spend some time working with groups of organisations and teams where we take them through an exercise to understand what we call red and blue behaviours. There's a wonderful, I say wonderful, there's a system built around sort of gaming theory, and I won't go into that because that's going to take up the rest of this time we've got together, but the principle is, you know, it's around methods that were used in the Cold War, where, you know, in essence, if you put two people in a room together, eventually they'll start to compete if you don't put the right conditions around them as such. And the same occurs with partnerships, really. You know, we set up some behaviours within the partnerships and make people understand how and what to look for if things start to go slightly awry. And we would, in these circumstances, you know, be reminding that partner that it takes all of us for this to work. Mm-hmm. And if one part of it doesn't work, then there's a problem the partnership has, not with that one party. So, yeah, it's. I mean, egos should be left at the door, and that's a really positive thing if it can be done. But sometimes, particularly if there's a fantastic win, you do find that egos creep back in. But it is about a bit of peer working, reminders, you know, hang on, we're all in this together, reminders about the things that good partners should demonstrate in terms of behaviours and bring them back into line a little bit. And that works quite well. And because we've built up this open dialogue, we can have some difficult conversations or slightly more tense conversations without falling out with each other, which is really important.
Absolutely. One of the things that I want to talk about as well is accountability, if I may, because I think One of the ways in which, again, when I kind of probe a bit deeper when people say about partnership working not being effective, then people will talk about kind of going to multi-agency forums, and, you know, actions are given to people, and then they'll go to the next one and that action is still outstanding, and then they'll go again and then it's still outstanding, and, you know, the case isn't being moved forward, or perhaps that officer is being hindered from being able to do their part of the jigsaw because the other agency is perhaps not doing what they should do. What would be your suggestion and advice about how you can kind of hold people to account in a way that gets the job done but doesn't alienate the person that you're trying to hold to account?
I mean, again, for me, this comes back into the buy-in, the mutual buy-in around the objectives, to start with, so that we're all clear that what we're doing is focusing on those objectives. Because if we can do that, then those involved will be more interested in the results that are being generated. And if people are interested in results, that means that actually they're taking accountability for that performance, and then you're getting commitment, and then you're building up a real environment of trust. So I think for me, it comes back to, you know, what are our objectives? How do we measure that? And how do we know? And getting all of the parties involved on the same page, you know, and then we really can make it quite a powerful partnership in focusing on those results.
And I suppose it goes back to your point about expectations, really, isn't it? So, you know, I suppose the first question to ask ourselves is, have we been clear in what we've expected from that person, rather than diving straight to the jugular, which is you haven't done what you said you were going to do. I suppose it's that just checking in to make sure that we've been clear and they've understood what it is that was expected in the first place.
Yeah, absolutely. And checking in again and checking in again at different points. Because again, you know, the key thing around this is that you have to do that at different points to sort of, one, assess where you are. We try and measure, and we would urge, you know, all partnerships to try and measure how it's performing against those expectations. And the more that you do that and check back in every month or 3 months or quarter or 6 months or whatever, the more that you can really calibrate that relationship and follow that performance. And if you don't do that, then in essence what you'll do is you'll start to drift and drift in different directions. So your sort of process of assessing the relationship in its softest sense is by just checking back in on those expectations. And of course they also change over time. They will change and shift as other things around, you know, different agencies or teams will also change and shift, particularly at the moment when everything is so pressurized or you know, volatile to some degree. It's important to keep just making sure that your understanding of the other's expectations are still the same.
I mean, I have to say, to anyone listening, I am being quite mean to you because I am throwing questions at you that we haven't spoken about. So again, if you've got, by all means, please turn around and say, I need some time to think about that. But I guess I'm just musing over the fact that, and kind of applying some of what you're talking about to situations I've seen. And, you know, we have in antisocial behaviour, we have these kind of multi-agency forums that I've referred to where, you know, we have representation from a wide range of agencies and talk about specific people who are perpetrating ASB, essentially with a view to kind of having an action plan around how we can try and resolve that ASB using a range of kind of traditional enforcement methods, but also support and prevention as well. And I think very often where those meetings fail is because they've been allowed to drift. And it was that word that you used that kind of triggered this in my mind. And so what tends to end up happening is that people are going, and they're going fortnightly or monthly, and they're sitting there for, you know, 2 hours, 3 hours at a time, having the same conversations round and round. And it almost feels like those meetings have lost their purpose and lost what they should be about. And I suppose, and I know you've not been part of those meetings, but I'm sure you've been part of meetings that have of a similar nature before. But would you have any suggestion if somebody is sitting here listening and going, yeah, you know what, that sounds like our multi-agency meeting. Have you got any suggestions about anything that they can do from a practical point of view to try and get some improvements in those type of forums?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a really good example. And you're right. I have been involved in or sat in some meetings like that in the past. And because of a lack of clarity, what tends to happen, as you've sort of illustrated, is that invariably what people do is sit there and think, actually, why am I here?
Mm-hmm.
Or they'll be doing something else other than concentrating on the content of the meeting. And I think at that point, really, what we need is for someone to say, actually, can we just take a step back for a moment and really think about what the purpose of this meeting could be? What do we want this to be? And I think it needs someone to step up and to say that and say, do we actually feel there is some value that we could glean from this meeting, and then put something, you know, very, very firmly in place around the meeting structure? Because if we then have, you know, a purpose for that meeting and what we would like to get from it, and then we can have a meeting structure that reflects it, then people should, if they're bought into that, come to that meeting and be very focused on the items and the things that you've agreed. I think, you know, as you say, without clarity around that purpose, it just starts to fall apart and people won't come, or they'll just sit and play with their emails or whatever during the meetings. I think for me, it is about that clarity of purpose. What's the meeting about? And for someone to step up and say that, and be brave, really, to say, to some degree, either these meetings do have a purpose, in which case let's be clear about what it is and how we discuss it during these meetings, or actually why are we actually bothering to have the meetings. And you know, that invariably is something that needs to be done, I think, if that's the case.
I think you're right. And I mean, particularly at the moment, I mean, you know, we're recording this in February 2021, so it feels like we're deep in the darkest midst of this pandemic at the moment. And I know that one of the things that people are struggling with quite a lot at the moment is kind of virtual meeting exhaustion almost. So it seems to have become okay and the norm for people to literally have back-to-back virtual meetings from the minute they turn their computer on to the minute they turn it off at night. And I think, you know, that's not a good work-life balance or a good balance at work at all. And I think you're absolutely right. People need to see value in the meetings that they're being asked to attend. Because even from a very simple point of view, if you don't feel that the meeting is valuable, but you know you've got to be there, then you've got every opportunity to turn your camera off and get on with something else, which means that everybody in that forum is missing out on the true benefit of everybody being around the table. So I think now more than ever, with, you know, reduced capacity and heightened demands on our time, we need to make sure that everything that we do has got maximum value for us. And you can understand why some agencies kind of disengage, because, you know, if they can't immediately see why attending an ASB forum is of benefit to them, and then they do go to one and they find out that actually, yeah, this hasn't brought me any benefit, then why are they going to carve out that time in their diary in the future? So I've seen that, where an agency has come for kind of a meeting because they've been told they need to, but then they never come back again. And I always question whether it's because they've not really been bought into what the true value of that meeting is. So I think there's some key points there. I think probably there might be a kind of a misbalance of roles and hierarchy and kind of responsibilities in some of these forums. So what I mean by that is, you might find that, you know, a police sergeant or a police inspector is chairing the meeting, and then an ASB officer is attending from housing, for example. So it may well be that the ASB officer in themselves doesn't feel comfortable to raise some of the concerns about the meeting with the chair, who was said might be perceived as being a higher rank. But I suppose there's nothing stopping that officer from raising it with their own line manager, and for perhaps that their line manager to have that conversation.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, it's difficult, as you say, when you do have different levels or ranks of people in a meeting, and sometimes, you know, people generally maybe feel uncomfortable or just maybe a bit shy, or and that's one of those things where you're trying to encourage a group of people to interact together, aren't you, and to treat each other as equals to some degree. And that's you know,
I think you're right, because I think there's a bit of a responsibility there from the chair, isn't there? Because the chair, you would hope that the chair would kind of cultivate this environment where people can challenge without defensiveness, or where they can feed back without feeling that they can't because they perceive the chair to be of a higher rank than them. That to me doesn't feel like it. Perhaps if that is the dynamics of the group, then it doesn't really feel to me that perhaps they've achieved that aim of a kind of open relationship.
No, I'd agree with you there. And the key to, you know, to having some form of collaborative relationship is to be able to have that open and honest discussion and give open and honest feedback. And without, as you say, fear of, you know, looking silly, retribution, being judged, or whatever the case may be. And if you do create the right culture, and this is all about culture, it's about how we think and act, then it wouldn't matter who the chair is or what the ranks are around the table, because again, your fundamental focus is on the objectives and on the purpose of the meeting. And actually, the most important person in the room is probably the ASB officer quite often. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's really creating the environment where everyone feels really comfortable in contributing and also being, you know, the recipient of some feedback, provided that everyone in that group, that meeting, knows how to effectively and productively give sensible feedback. And I think sometimes those sorts of skills aren't always familiar or understood, or there's just a reluctance to have some of those conversations, and, you know, for all sorts of reasons. But if you get somebody who's in that sort of chair role, really setting a really positive culture about that and focusing in on that objective, there is absolutely no reason why you can't create a really productive environment.
Yeah, it's difficult, isn't it? Because I think we're seeing improvement. I mean, I've certainly seen improvements over maybe the last 5 or 6 years, but I think there used to be this view that, you know, we had to be like hyper on top of everything. We had to do everything perfectly 100% of the time. And, you know, you didn't want to admit if you hadn't done something, you know, to the best of your ability. And I think there's been this move over the last few years to be a little bit, you know, that kind of authentic leader thing, which is, you know, be open where you perhaps don't know something, be open where you perhaps haven't done something as well as you might have wanted to enable that opportunity to kind of learn and reflect. And I think it's that kind of concept, isn't it? It's that being able to ask for help, being able to say hasn't worked quite as well as we wanted. And I think really that's the kind of culture that we want to try and have within these forums, within partnership working.
It absolutely is. It really is. It is about, as I say, I know vulnerable is a difficult word to some degree, but to say that is exactly what we're trying to be. We're trying to be open and honest and transparent with each other. That's really what it is. And as you say, initially, sometimes that's uncomfortable for people, just because it's either something they're not used to, or it's an admission of something that doesn't feel particularly comfortable. But actually, it all comes back to, if we're all trying to do something for the greater good, the mutual objective, you know, we're all in the same room for that reason, then actually the people who are there with you should only want to try and support in some way rather than criticize. And it really is about changing the way in which we operate as a group, as a team. You know, it's a touch of the we're all in the same boat, let's keep it afloat, if we've all seen those posters on the wall, but it's absolutely true. And if you were all rowing a boat and one of you is rowing in the opposite direction, you're not going very far, you're not going to get anywhere, because that, you know, that person's struggling. So it's to everyone's advantage to really just try and be as supportive as possible, and to try and help facilitate, or whatever the case may be, or just be a shoulder and work around the challenges that sometimes other people are having. And you know, that takes a bit of getting used to. And but it's back to behaviours, as we sort of discussed earlier on, really. If you set the right tone and the right culture and set out how you want people to behave, you know, you do create a really positive environment for things to flourish and be successful.
And it strikes me from what we're discussing that actually the chair of any of these forums has quite a large role to play in terms of setting that tone.
Yeah, definitely. Absolutely right. They really do, because people are influenced by others. And so if you don't see somebody in that sort of leadership role in that meeting, which is what they are, they're a leader for that particular group or forum, then invariably the culture starts to change. So they have to lead by example. They really do.
That's a really interesting point, because I'm a big believer in terms of, I mean, I've had managers where it would have been seen as a failing for me to say, you know, I don't know the answer to that. I need to go away and find out. Where I've had other managers who have been completely kind of welcoming of, you know, you don't need to know everything all of the time. And that's what other people are around you for, to help you and to support you and help you find the answer and develop. You don't have to be the perfect package from the offset. And I know very much that I've seen it myself, that when you have the former of those managers where you feel like you have to be 100%, 100% of the time, that trickles down through to your team as well. But I've not really thought of it on a kind of smaller basis in terms of like the chair of meetings. So I think that's a really interesting point that you just made. I think there might well be people that are listening to this and thinking, do you know what, maybe our kind of partnership forums are so far down the track of, you know, not being as effective as we want them to be. You know, there's so much of what, you know, you and I have been talking about that they need to address, that they might kind of think actually maybe is now the time to almost create a blank page and start from scratch in terms of building these forums back up, or, you know, redesigning the way we work with each other. If somebody was to come to you and say, right, we you know, we're just about to start building relationships with another agency, what sort of basic things would you encourage them to think about that's going to help them build a genuine and long-lasting relationship?
Well, I think again for me, it is that acknowledgement of why. And being quite clear about that, and your value as an agency in that partnership, you know, what's the benefit? What's the value that you're going to bring, as much as what are you looking for your other partners to bring? I'd be quite clear in my own mind what we need to do in terms of objectives, so that they can be shared and get them, you know, get them shared at the first discussion and really set the tone. Because at the earliest stage, if your objectives are poles apart, it starts to tell you very quickly that this isn't going to be necessarily the most productive partnership. So I think, you know, share, get some preparation done and go to that meeting and start to share how you think it could work and what the objectives could be and how you know it's successful in the future. And get the other parties to share back, and you know that gets you in a position where your foundation is consistent and is in a position that you can build upon. But you do have to sort of agree then how you're going to work together, how you're going to, you know, if you like, conduct yourselves, and what forums you need, and how that's going to be looked after and shared. And you can start to, you won't solve everything in, you know, straight away, but what you'll do is you'll create that open dialogue where you can start to really discuss things openly with each other, do a bit of sharing. And as I say, you know, don't be embarrassed or feel silly if you start to just have a general conversation over a coffee and talk about, you know, some of the more, you know, personal things in your life, and just generally break the barriers down. I think if you can do that a little bit, it starts to soften things around the meeting. So the key is, as you know, we've sort of started to talk about, get your foundation steps right, your why, what you're bringing, your objectives, and you know, encourage that dialogue with your partner so you can build a solid foundation.
I suppose it's learning a bit more about each other as well, isn't it? So like, as you almost, you know, before you set those shared objectives, make sure you're setting those objectives on reality. Because if you're setting those objectives on your perception of what another agency does or what another agency is trying to achieve, then again, they're probably not going to be right. And it strikes me, you know, just almost that call to the social worker that, you know, never attends a meeting, to kind of say, I'd really like to get to know a little bit more about what you do, and I'd really like to share a little bit more with you about what we do. And that it almost feels like that really kind of organic starting point to build and improve that relationship. And as I said, check understanding, check that we know what each other wants to achieve, check that we have a mutual understanding of language and et cetera.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And language is quite key. I think, you know, language and tone often is an area that we don't spend enough time understanding some of those, I suppose, peculiarities, if you like, sometimes to particular groups or particular organisations, and they create a barrier in themselves. So I think whatever you can do to create that common understanding, to in essence set the culture, because you know that ultimately is what you're creating, your own culture between the partners, you know, make sure that it's a fit. Sometimes it isn't a fit, and that's, you know, that's not any one person's fault. It's just sometimes there is just not a natural fit, and I think being able to recognize that is actually quite a powerful thing in itself. But assuming there is a fit, then in reality, as you say, being able to pick the phone up, break the barriers down a little bit, create that mutual understanding, I think is absolutely key.
I mean, there may well be people that are listening that are thinking, do you know what, I totally agree with everything you're saying, but actually I've tried some of this stuff already and it just simply isn't working. I mean, I have examples cited to me, you know, where people just can't get responses to emails, they're not getting returned to telephone calls, they, you know, can't even get the person to speak to them. If relationships seem to have broken down to such a degree that initial engagement just isn't proving possible, what kind of advice would you have for somebody that found themselves in that position?
Yeah, it's a difficult situation, isn't it? And I think with all partnerships, there are tensions and there are difficult periods, and it's the ability to come through the other side of them, I think, that is most powerful. But you're right, sometimes there is that lack of engagement, and for me there's always something underlying it. There's always something that's specifically causing it. And I guess if you can't get specific people to engage, it's whether you can, you know, use networks and other connections to those people to honestly try and find out just a little bit about what's going on around them. You know, we've had it in the past where we had two teams who were suddenly stopped engaging, and all sorts of different methods, as you described, phone, email, you know, you name it. And actually, first thing they did was to get someone else involved that was outside of the day-to-day team to try and get under the skin of what was happening. And that sometimes a different person is quite refreshing.
Yeah.
But also, when we did manage to sit down with them, there was a very plausible reason, sensible reason why things had gone wrong. But what they failed to do was to communicate. And I think what often we have to remember is that communication is one of the signs that there is, you know, or the lack of it is the sign that there's pressure. And I think just to be mindful about perhaps the frequency of communication in a partnership, and the style of the communication as well, because both of those tend to be sort of early warning triggers that something's going on. So you can use them as a bit of a barometer, but if, well, you know, invariably people don't just cut off straight away, it'll be a gradual decline is what we tend to see.
I think the problem is with the job that officers listening do is there's almost always that underlying fear of something going wrong. So, you know, we see sort of serious case reviews hitting the headlines where, you know, agencies are really held at fault because there's been a tragic circumstances that has led to, you know, a death or something. And officers are always really mindful of that. And I think, so I think from my point of view, it's just that reminder that an unpleasant or unfortunate or difficult experience with an agency in the past shouldn't stop us from trying to engage with them, because it's the right thing to do. And also to make sure that we record those attempts to engage, because, you know, goodness, we hope it never happens. But if there is something that leads to a serious case review, then although it feels quite uncomfortable to think about it, I think, because there's a human element, there's a loss of life potentially, there is also that need to protect yourself and to protect the business and show that you've attempted to do the right things. So I think you're right. I think sometimes it's really difficult to get people to cooperate. And I think you're right about thinking about what does that mean? Is there something deeper going on there? But also just about making sure that those attempts are documented somewhere, that they're recorded. You know, you don't want to do is be stood in, you know, I don't know, be being investigated as part of a serious case review, and you kind of turn around and go, well, I made 10 attempts to try and speak to social services, but none of those attempts are documented. So I think there's that kind of balance of, you know, trying our hardest to engage and to try and understand why that engagement isn't happening, but also to make sure we're protecting ourselves as well by making sure that we record those attempts.
Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right. And you know, there are some very specific and different circumstances, aren't there, within the sorts of teams that you know, we're talking about today. And you'd be absolutely right to document that. But in, you know, I think in any circumstance, if there is a breakdown in communication, I think you'd be right to document it anyway, because ultimately at some point when somebody invariably, you know, raises their head in the future, which they do, and suddenly says, oh, you know, we've stopped doing this or we've stopped doing that, that's often how these things suddenly manifest themselves. And it's, well, not for the want of trying. You know, you can show your efforts, and I think that's important to do that, and you can use the efforts, you know, as a catalyst for some discussions. Okay, I tried this, tried that, tried the other, why didn't it work, what happened then? And you know, again, if people do have a real desire for this relationship to you know, be resurrected and to work, then again it starts that open and honest discussion, or so it doesn't happen again is the important thing. And communication is so tricky, but often is the background behind failure of a partnership every time.
No, I would totally agree. And I see that all the time, unfortunately. Kim, it surprises me every time I record these episodes, but we are almost at the end of time already. I could honestly probably continue talking for the rest of the afternoon. But no, I'm so grateful for the time that you have given me. There's a couple of things that if people are listening, I just wanted to kind of re-highlight, I suppose, some of the things that I found particularly interesting about what you said. I think for me, it was that real, you know, let's perhaps, if something isn't working, whether that's in a multi-agency forum, whether that's one-on-one relationships that we've got with partners, that we don't just carry on sort of drifting. And I think that's been my favourite word that you've used so far today is drifting. That perhaps we take time to stop, reflect, work out whether actually we haven't got those things in place that you refer to around the kind of shared objectives, shared understanding, shared perception, shared expectations, those measurements of success. So I guess I always like to leave people with practical things that they can take away. And I suppose, therefore, my challenge for any listener who may be experiencing difficulties with partnership working is to maybe reflect on those elements and see whether there are any missing from the relationships that they have. And perhaps that's what's causing those unstable foundations. But it just leaves me really to say a huge thank you, Kim. I found that incredibly interesting, and I'm sure anyone listening will have as well. So a huge, huge thank you. If people would like to find out a little bit more about what you do, find out a little bit more about how you might be able to assist them, perhaps with some of their work that they've got, what's the best way of getting hold of you?
I think if people were to drop me an email, which my email address is kim_newman@pmlgroup.com, I'd be more than happy to help and assist. But we also have a little scorecard that you can use for free, which helps you to test how collaborative you are. So if anyone would like to get the link for that, I'd be more than happy to send that on.
Oh, that's fabulous. I mean, if you don't mind, it could be something that I share in the information that gets sent out with this podcast.
Yeah, no problem.
That sounds like a really great way of seeing how effective we are. It sounds like something I should probably do as well. practice what I preach. But otherwise, just to say a massive thank you, Kim. That's been really, really useful. I'm very, very grateful for your time.
It's been a pleasure, Janine. Thank you for your time. I've enjoyed it.
Thank you very much. And also, just to say a huge thank you to anybody who's still listening 56 minutes down from the start. I hope that you've found some useful points and some practical advice that you can perhaps take away and hopefully develop those partnerships that you have around you. I have been a frontline officer myself. I have managed teams of ASB officers. I absolutely understand the struggles of partnership working. But what I would say is that the strongest teams, the strongest areas that tackle ASB, without exception, they have a strong rooting in partnership working. And what I would say, and I echo some of what Kim said already, is that an investment in time in improving those partnership arrangements will pay absolute dividends in terms of how well you can achieve your outcomes of resolving ASB and supporting victims to best effect. Which seems the absolute best place to leave this episode. As always, if you have any suggestions for future topics, if you would like to be a speaker, if you have any suggestions for speakers, then please do let me know through the normal communication channels. So my website, Twitter, email, all those normal routes. Otherwise, I will say that I hope that you all are all well, even in these continuing challenging times. And until next episode, thank you.